back.
We're descending toward Hill Valley, California at 4:29 p.m. on Wednesday, October 21st, 2015.
Back to the Future.
Hack.
Part 4.
On Triple J with Tom Tilly.
Yeah, welcome to the future. It is October 21, 2015, in case you didn't already know. And today on Hack, we are going to get back in the DeLorean. We're going back to the future again. And this time we're going to set the time machine another 30 years into the future. We're going to see what's going on in 2045. Welcome to Hack to the Future, Part 4.
Hack. 2045. Maybe a watch that has a hologram on it.
Robotic dogs and robotic cats.
To build a better future, we need to start with better dreams.
Goddamn hoverboards. I want them.
Triple J.
Okay, we are talking about a movie that came out in 1989, so you might not have been born then, but Back to the Future 2 was a hugely important film. When the Doc takes Marty McFly and his girlfriend Jennifer from 1985 to October 21, 2015, we got a fascinating snapshot of what our world might have become. Now that we're here, Ange McCormack finds out what they got right.
Hey, Doc, you better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
That's Doc Brown taking Marty McFly on his first ride in a flying car, the DeLorean, heading 30 years into the future, a.k.a. today, October 21st, 2015.
What the hell is going on here?
But turns out Doc was wrong, because we still need roads, like total suckers.
That's how far it's needles.
But there's a lot that Back to the Future Part 2 got right, like smart TVs and video calling.
All right, well,
they were pretty spot on.
Take down the den.
Widescreen smart TVs. They're doing things like, you know, they're teleconferencing and they're talking to each other.
That's Mark Fennell, you know, that movie guy.
I think what's most interesting about movies like Back to the Future and anything that predicts the future is how they always get like 30%, 40% right.
Like fashion.
It's basically the 80s on steroids.
And it sort of made a comeback.
Drying mode on.
Self-drying clothes is a fascinating one.
Your jacket is now dry.
Because we are seeing the rise of smart fabrics, fabrics that will react to sweat and things like that. So in a way, what we've had is technology that's leapt beyond what was predicted in the movie.
Also, tech rage.
Tracked.
You know when your internet doesn't load? Yeah, they nailed that too.
Human nature hasn't changed that much. Like, we're always going to get frustrated at the gap between what we hope technology will do and what it actually does.
Okay, but what about the big one?
Stop.
Hoverboards.
I need to borrow your hoverboard.
The glaring one, the one that everyone always comes back to, is, of course, the hoverboard. And there's been a lot of attempts at making hoverboards work. YouTube is filled with videos of people desperately trying to make hoverboards work. Of course, Lexus made what looked very much like a hoverboard, but it only worked on a metal pathway. It was total bullshit, if you ask me.
But Hack's Alice Workman tried one for herself today at the ANU.
So I'm sitting on, I guess, what I call a hoverboard.
That's Dr. Graham Walker. It wasn't quite like the movie.
In that we have a piece of wooden board with a couple of leaf blowers blowing down through the board and a little bit of vinyl under the bottom, and that makes a nice little cushion of air that the hovercraft can actually float on and, yeah, glide along with very little friction.
How far off the ground can it get?
Well, you know, I don't like to answer that question too precisely. The answer is not very far.
It's the one part of reality that really failed us compared to Back to the Future. Goddamn hoverboards. I want them.
And they also missed, you know, like a pretty big invention. The internet.
You realise after a while watching it that none of the machines, none of this amazing technology is talking to each other. And what's surprising is how much we realise that that's such an important part of the way we live, this connectivity of all of our devices and things like that. And it's probably one of the most glaring things that Back to the Future really missed.
We were also promised rehydrated pizza.
Hydrate level 4, please.
Oh, boy, Mom. You sure can hydrate a pizza.
The closest we've got, I think, is microwaves and ovens with steam power. So basically what they have is they inject steam into the food so it doesn't taste like reconstituted food. That's about as close as we've gotten, and it's still not the same, and it's still a bit disappointing.
And sadly, double ties and auto laces haven't quite taken off.
Personally, I think double ties are long overdue. I'm amazed nobody's brought it in.
So Back to the Future's version of 2015 wasn't 100% spot on. but Mark Fennell still thinks we can learn something from it.
I think it's really important that we have movies like Back to the Future, that we have things that look forward, that give us a blueprint for what the future will be, give us an imagination of what the future will be, because so often what you see over history, in the history of popular culture, is that those are the sorts of things that inspire scientists and innovators. For that reason alone, Back to the Future Day has been worth it.
Ha! Triple J.
Mark Fennell ending that report from Ange McCormack and Caitlin Sorey. And you are listening to Hack to the Future Part 4. We're going to get into the DeLorean in a moment and travel to 2045 and find out what the hell is going on the text line. In 2045, Sydney property prices will hit the $1 billion mark. All right, I'd love to hear from you. If you've got a prediction of something that will exist in 2045, give us a call, 1300 055 36, 1300 055 36. Let's talk. All right, now both our guests are actually, they have an interesting profession. They're futurists. We have Mark Pesci, who's a consultant on technology at Sydney University. Happy Back to the Future Day, Mark.
Thank you.
Our other guest was a product designer for 20 years and is now a lecturer in design at Swinburne Uni in Melbourne. Bridget Engler-Newbury, welcome to Hack to the Future Part 4.
Hello.
Now, Mark, we heard there in the story there with Mark Fennell, the internet. Where was it? How did they get that wrong?
And the thing is, so Back to the Future 2 comes out in 1989, and that is actually the year that a guy named Tim Berners-Lee is sitting in a lab in Geneva inventing the World Wide Web. And, you know, the internet existed before the World Wide Web. No one had a use for it. And so really what you see is that while we may have had it, we completely missed the point until we saw the web, and the web came out, and all of a sudden you get all of these uses for all of the world that, you know, is invisible to us. The world of 2015 doesn't look really that much different from 1985, except when you sort of peel away the surface, everything else, Wikipedia, Google, all of the stuff that we know and share, Reddit, everything, it's all there, and it's all in our heads all the time.
Bridget, it does seem like, especially in the things they get right, that they're having a laugh at us. I mean, they have a gigantic television in the lounge room where you watch six things at once. That's pretty much what we do.
It is, because we choose to. And that technology may well have been imagined by someone else based on their idea of a preferred future, but someone got out there and made it, and now we're out there buying this stuff.
Yeah, are you surprised how much they did get right?
Well, I think any idea about the future is going to be useful, and I'm stealing that liberally from a futurist by the name of James Dator, because it gives us something to aspire to. But no, I don't find it ridiculous. We're human beings. We are interested in stuff that keeps us engaged, and if it's new and exciting, then someone's going to chase after it.
Tony's called in with a prediction for 2045. Tony, what is it?
I'd love to see not cars, transport like George Jetson.
Yeah, we didn't get that either, did we, Mark? Is that likely to happen? Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, the flying cars. I swore that I would cry if someone mentioned the flying cars. Here's the thing. A flying car is going to be really loud because it's blowing a lot of air. And so, you know, if you can imagine the skies filled with millions of jet planes flying overhead, imagine being in Merrickville all the time with that Merrickville pause as a jet goes overhead going and landing at Sydney Airport. This is one reason why we don't have them. The other reason is because humans would make really bad pilots. Now, when we get self-driving cars, which we're getting right now, like next month, they're going to be testing them in
South
Australia.
Surely planes will be next, self-driving planes.
But that's the thing. Once you get a self-driving car, getting a self-driving plane is going to be a lot easier and a lot less dangerous, and so maybe we'll see them after that, but they're still going to be loud.
Okay, on the text line, this was a movie, we are measuring ourselves on it, are we? How about Terminator? That shears is getting real. Autonomous killing machines and our computers sound really scary. Someone else says augmented reality, like virtual reality, is where it's all going. Dave from Mount Elevon, isn't it funny that after today all the events from Back to the Future will happen in the past? Oh, that's twisting my head big time.
Well, especially because the future doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's true. Wow. My head is spinning all around at the moment. Now, Back to the Future 2 obviously gave us such a fascinating intersection of fiction and our future reality. And fiction is often inspired by reality, but reality and future realities can also be inspired by fiction. And there's actually a university department at Arizona State University called the Center for Science and Imagination, and it aims to cultivate really out there fictional narratives that can inspire science and vice versa. Now, the man who set that up, the department in Arizona, is Ed Finn. Ed Finn, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Now, Ed, 3 years ago, you set up the Center for Science and Imagination at Arizona State University. Why was that necessary?
We started the center as a response to a problem that we think is still persistent in the way that we think about the future as a society, as a global community. Dystopianism is so pervasive in any conversation that we have about the future. It tends to involve all of the terrible things that are going to happen, and really a sense of fatalism and hopelessness about the tremendous challenges that face us, the challenges of poverty, of war, the challenges of climate change. Those are really difficult problems, but we're never going to solve them if we assume they can't be solved. And so if we only focus on all the bad things that might happen, not only are we dissuading people from thinking about the future at all, we're not giving people any kind of pathways or objectives for things that we might want to work towards.
Do you think dystopianism is more prevalent now than it was, say, in the 80s and 90s? I mean, around the time when Back to the Future came out, the world seemed to be really looking to the future and really excited about technology. Do you think that's changed?
I think that our relationship with the future continues to be complicated. And it's been complicated at least since World War II. There was a golden age of science fiction, and there have been bursts of optimism since then. But we've come increasingly to realize that technological progress does not always lead to utopia and to a better world for everybody. And so things have gotten a lot more complicated. I think Back to the Future is a really playful exploration of what the world might look like. Most of the stories we tell, we fall into a kind of genre expectation that a story is only serious if it's critical. In fact, when you think about it, it's actually much harder to tell a compelling and plausible optimistic story than it is to take all of the problems that we have now and magnify them.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to put things together.
One of your projects is this book called Hieroglyph, where there are these fascinating chapters predicting futuristic scenarios like flying, like actual telepathy. How do you think these fictional narratives can influence design and technology in the real world?
First of all, I think these stories are really important just to push that envelope, that horizon of possibility, to say these things might be possible and we should consider them not just as technical possibilities, but as social and cultural possibilities. What would the world be like? How would you get to work? How would you relate to your family? What kind of a job would you have? Where would you live if these facts about the world were changed? And that's a really important exercise. And science fiction is a really cheap laboratory to play those ideas out. And too often we lead with the technical solution or the technical problem, and we don't really think about the bigger picture and the ramifications of that idea. To build a better future, we need to start with better dreams. The ideas in Hieroglyph are fascinating, and I love them. I'm not necessarily convinced that we're going to be flying to work anytime soon, as David Brin's story in the collection. But going through the process of imagining that might help somebody be the adaptive thinker that we're going to need at some crucial point to solve a problem that we will have.
Okay, and Ed, thinking forward, putting yourself inside the DeLorean, what do you see when you look at 2045?
One thing that all the science fiction writers will tell you immediately is that they are not future fortune tellers. They can't see the future, and that if you're very, very lucky as a writer, you might get one or two guesses right. But the other thing they'll tell you is that the future really looks a lot like the present and like the past. And in some ways, the best way to see the future is to reflect on how much things have changed in the past 30, 40 years.
Ed, fantastic to speak to you. Thank you so much for joining us there in Arizona.
Oh, no problem. My pleasure.
Hack. Triple J.
That was Ed Finn, who set up the Center for Science and Imagination at Arizona State University. Now, Mark Pesce, it was fascinating as you look through history to think about how much fiction has actually influenced technological developments.
Yeah. I mean, the modern example that I think we all need to keep in mind is the word cyberspace. So all the cyber things that we do comes from a novel called Neuromancer, published in 1984 by William Gibson. And it hit just as sort of technology was starting to take off, just as networks were starting to take off. And when the web took off, everyone started calling it cyberspace. Cyberspace is where the bank keeps your money. Cyberspace is where we're going to hang out.
So again, it was kind of a joke. that ended up real.
It wasn't. Well, he was talking about a future that was, in fact, very dystopian,
right,
where the networks were pervasive. There were hackers, and it really talked about a lot of the culture that we live in now around hackers attacking banks and breaking into systems and things like this. So it was very prescient, but it was also talking about a world where corporations basically ruled everything, and everyone was struggling in this world. So there were parts of that vision that definitely took off. But that word, for some reason, just struck a chord and became the word that everyone used. And it's actually gone out of vogue and now coming back into vogue.
Oliver's called in from Sydney. Oliver, you're a 71-year-old futurist. How are you feeling on this special day?
Well, I'm feeling very special because I'm still here. but as I was saying to your colleague, I'm a little pissed off because I imagine that before we get too far into the future, there will be a situation where we basically never die. And it'll be really sort of unhappy for me to be in the last generation.
You're going to miss the cut. Sorry, Oliver. Yeah. We're all going to live forever.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's a real possibility.
when do you think that will be a possibility? What's your prediction?
Well, the day after I'm buried, I think.
Will that be your gift to humanity?
It will be. I would, you know, I'd like to have some special sort of thing written on my tombstone. But as a futurist, I was picking up on Mark's comments and the earlier comments. One of the things that interests me is the one about prediction. We can't predict the future. And I've done a lot of work in the last 20 years in what's called scenario planning.
Okay.
And what we try and do is to identify alternative futures. There isn't one future to predict. There are lots of different futures.
I wish I'd done that with Back to the Future. They could have made about 16 different versions and we all could have been entertained for days and days. Oliver, great to speak to you. Thanks so much for joining us on the text line. Everyone's dwelling on hoverboards, but they've forgotten about the actual time machine. We need one of those. Then we can have hoverboards. Someone else says, flying cars won't be noisy as we would use anti-gravity to keep aloft.
Mark? Yeah, unfortunately, we cannot break laws of physics that we haven't invented
Not yet.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I thought the future would be cooler. Hack. I thought the future would be cooler, cooler, cooler. On Triple J with Tom Tilley. You are listening to Hack to the Future 4, and it is time to get back in the DeLorean. We are going back to the future. We're going to set the clock to 2045, which is 30 years from now. Here's Alice Workman firing up the flux capacitor.
Marty! You've got to come back with me.
Where? Back to the future.
The year is 2045. White Roy's just been elected President of the Republic of Australia, and things look a little different.
Wait a minute, Doc. What are you talking about? Now, what happens to us in the future?
2045. I think maybe a watch that has a hologram on it that you can talk to people.
Jetson's flying car.
Robotic dogs and robotic cats would be in retirement homes.
Hoverboards, of course. Well, the big music news for 2045 is that the Avalanches have just released their second studio album.
That's Nick Findlay. He's the assistant music director at Triple J, and he's got some interesting track predictions for the 2045 Hottest 100.
Well, Northwest and Blue Ivy are going to be doing a Watch the Throne 2.0 type thing.
Bitches in Paris?
Great Scott!
And the other really exciting thing, especially for us oldies, is that Lorde is going to be continuing her Las Vegas residency. She's been doing it for about 3 years now, and she's playing all the hits that your parents used to get off on, like Royals and Tennis Court.
My country. Calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
I want safer, like, cars, so more solar cars. I want it to be less gas, so less global warming.
I think 2045 will be a bit mixed. I think we will see a range of climate change impacts affecting us.
That's Amanda McKenzie, CEO of the Climate Council.
We're powered by clean energy, that households have solar panels, but they also have batteries to store that energy to use it day and night. We'll see solar thermal technology, which is large-scale baseload solar powering us. We'll have wind technology. The world will look quite different.
The Australian Bureau of Statistics predicts Australia's population will be over 31 million by 2040, and that'll impact the environment.
If we do nothing, we'll continue to see changing climate. That means the world will be hotter, there'll be more extreme weather, heat waves, fire conditions, extreme rainfall and flooding. Sea levels will rise. And the natural environment will change around us. The Great Barrier Reef will bleach over and over. Animals and plants will be under increasing pressure, and so many will go extinct. If we do nothing, we could see a dramatic change to our ski slopes, a lot less snow. But if we act, there can be some preservation.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
I think, like, it might, like, be more, like, less people on the ground and more up high. Like, maybe more people up in skies in, like, floating houses and stuff.
Sky
like that.
Cities.
Yeah. Yeah, monorails and flying cars.
Self-driving cars are already starting to happen. They'll be there. They'll be safer than cars driven by people. You can drive to work. You don't have to park. You just press a button. It takes itself off somewhere where it's cheap to park, comes back when you want it.
That's Robert Marnie. He's a professor of robotics at ANU.
Riding bicycles will potentially have some intelligence in them and be helping you.
Robert's vision of 2045 is all about machines.
There will be talking houses. You know, it'll all be connected. It'll know where you are in the house and be looking after you. There'll be, you know, robotic vacuum cleaners are there now, so there'll be robotic lawnmowers. There'll be robots that clean up clothes. There'll be things like that that'll just be very easy to build and to continue. Things like wheelbarrows in working sites. There'll be legged wheelbarrows, for example. A lot of physical labour jobs will have aids, which are those sort of machines.
But Rob isn't sold on robots that look like humans.
Robotic person is a bit creepy, and I suspect that it's going to stay being pretty creepy.
As Dr. Emmett Brown said, where we are going, we don't need roads. Well, I think in sex, where we're going, we don't need humans.
Rob Goodwin's the general manager of Love Honey Australia, and he says the future of sex is all about robot dolls.
The interaction between adults to adults might take second place to customised adult products and customised robotic dolls.
That look human but act independently. They're wireless and are controlled over the internet via Bluetooth, app, Skype or your phone.
Like the twerking butt which interacts, a vibrating butt which you can stimulate, which your phone taps into. You can have an orgy with robotic technology. You go back in time and make love to yourself.
Great Scott! And just like a car, you can customise robot dolls however you want.
Hair colour, skin type, eye colour, etc. I think you might be able to take the body of Elle McPherson, you know, the butt of Beyonce, the legs of Kate Moss, and if you're so inclined, the head of Pauline Hanson, and create whatever your sensibility or whatever your desires are. You could customise everything to your own minute detail.
But what about love?
I still think there's always room for love and intimacy, but it might take second place to your own customised second partner.
Hack on Triple J with Tom Tilley.
Well, sex could be pretty weird here in 2045, Mark Pesci, but I guess you don't have to rely on other people as much, which could be handy.
Well, we're actually starting to get people like Sherry Turkle, who's been working with people for 30 years on digital technology, starting to warn about the dangers of false intimacy and losing our capacity to be able to connect with people in intimate situations. And, you know, there will be a temptation. And the temptation's only going to grow as these things get better. And we're going to have to negotiate that.
Trent from Melbourne, you've got more of a hope than a prediction for 2045.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I suppose bouncing off the idea of everything getting so much more efficient that we get to a point where technology takes over from the need for humans to be involved in the workforce. Like, they're more efficient than any human would be able to be. And I suppose the extension of that is that eventually either we make so much money that we don't have to worry about it anymore, or things become so cheap that we don't have to worry about it anymore. And we start to turn about, you know, things become about community and things become about self-growth and the development of each other rather than anything about status symbols, because money isn't an issue anymore.
That sounds like heaven.
That's the hope.
there's actually a name for that. It's called robot communism.
Right.
All right.
That doesn't sound as good.
Technological singularity was what I always heard of it.
Yeah, interesting point there. Bridget, do you think that could ever happen?
Depends on whether we choose it. I think, to the point made before by Oliver, is that there are multiple different futures available to us, and the further out in time we go, the more possible futures there are. And 2045 is not that far away, really. It's only 30 years, and yes, there can be some changes, but whether or not we're willing to go down those sort of paths is really up to us as people to decide.
Yeah.
Some of it's going to be constrained by technology, but it's down to us.
Yeah, it's a lot about priorities as well, isn't
yep.
it? On the text line, I envision a future where Hack runs for an entire hour. What a beautiful future that would be. Somebody else says, this whole robot sex thing is just freaky, freaky. We'll probably die out if that happens. That's an interesting point. We do have sex for a reason. Sometimes I forget that.
Tinder. Well, we can have...
Tinder.
Sorry, I was going to say we can have procreation. Yeah. Like in the micro... It was Handmaiden.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Mark, what sort of world do you imagine? If we walk down the street in 2045, what are we going to see?
The world is going to be filled with artificial intelligence everywhere. It's going to be listening, it's going to be watching, and it's going to be sort of whispering in your ear, helping you make the best possible decisions all the time. Of course, you'll still decide whether you're going to listen to that little voice on your shoulder or not. But that same intelligence or different fragments of it is also going to be in the entire world. So that entire world is also going to be watching and responding to you. It's something that years ago I termed the playful world, and that the world is going to have elements of play. So things that we think of as being inanimate today are going to have qualities of being alive.
Okay. One thing I was reading about, Bridget, was that computers, as we know them, might be history, and basically all our devices will really be much more streamlined. I mean, what do you see happening in that space?
There is the potential for that sort of ubiquitous, completely integrated connectivity that a lot of people aspire to. We are there with some technologies now, and I think the situation with the robots is we do have robots being tested for helping people in aged care have companionship. And I think that's an opportunity for design and technology, full stop, that to give dignity to aging and to disability, that there is technology available to us now that could improve lives and futures for people over the next 30, 50 years.
That's very optimistic. I mean, it was interesting before we were talking about a dystopian outlook on the world and whether people felt really negative about what was going to happen in the world or you know, whether they actually felt really optimistic. I mean, Mark, how do you think technological developments are going to help us deal with our problems by 2045? So we're talking about climate change, we're talking about population growth, food scarcity, those sort of problems.
Well, you could already take a look. We're already, if we want to be so much smarter on an average minute-by-minute basis than we were 10 years ago even, because we can open up a smartphone and get the best of what everyone knows. I want you to imagine amplifying that 100 times. So we would actually be smarter and making fewer stupid decisions, hopefully, every minute. And if we do that long enough and hard enough, we actually can end up in a better place.
Tim from Melbourne, you saw a futurist talk last week and you got a question about the transport industry?
Yeah, with autonomous vehicles improving, you know, safety and efficiency and already on the way, the transport industry is the biggest, I believe, the largest employer in Australia. And the futurist I saw speaking thought that they would probably be the first industry to become completely redundant with the transfer to, you know, robot drivers for deliveries and for you know, Uber and taxis and things like that. That's a huge impact of it, the biggest employment industry in Australia becoming redundant within a generation.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and it's a point that goes to a much bigger question, which is how does technological advancement in general affect our jobs? And Mark Pesce, does it mean that the wealth will become more concentrated in the hands of the people that own the technology?
Well, this is the argument for robot communism that people are making, which is that if we actually can overproduce using these machines, then does that overproduction just end up channeled into a few people's hands, or is it actually used for the benefit of all? That's one reason why those terms get thrown around. These are the questions that that future is presenting to us, and they're questions that we wouldn't have asked back in 1985. We didn't really kind of even know them, and actually in 2015, they're real questions because we can kind of see that we're going to be presented with those.
And Bridget, I find that fascinating for a slightly separate reason. I feel like potentially our relationship with the future is changing. So in 1989, when we saw this film, and it was, you know, basically, 26 years away to, let me do the math. Yeah, it was less than 30 years away. We thought that was millions of, it felt like forever in the future. But now that we're talking about 2045, it's still 30 years away. It doesn't seem as far. I mean, can we read the future better now than we could at that time?
We might have a better capacity in ourselves to anticipate things, to understand that there are lots of things that could emerge around us. And I think maybe technology is connected with that. Maybe it's just our ability as humans to look back on the past and use that to inform what we want and desire and might be challenged by as years come. Maybe there's a degree of curiosity in younger people that helps them understand that there's so many possibilities out there. And maybe in older people we become a little more cynical. But I think it's cultivating a capacity for foresight, the ability to look ahead and see more than the dystopian future and imagine what a wonderful world we could be having in 2045 is really critical.
Mm, and Mark, I guess very simply put, the smarter we get, does that mean the future's closer?
It means that the future is probably a little bit more under our own control.
Mm, interesting. It has been an absolutely fascinating show. Mark Pesci, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Bridget Engler-Newbury from Swinburne, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you.
Lots of great tech still coming in. In 2045, the NBN will hit the 50% completion milestone. Someone else says, car schmars. We're all going to have Iron Man suits to get around in. So good. Thank you so much for all your calls and texts today. Linda Mariano is up next with Good Nights. I'll catch you tomorrow.
Back on Triple J with Tom Tilly.